Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another Baseball America Prospect podcast. I think this is the final of, we are doing this Fix It series, where we are trying to help fix suggestions for how to fix teams that have been struggling. And I think we saved the biggest for last in a lot of ways. And I'll explain that in a few minutes, but Jeff, great to see you. We're fixing the Angels today. We're going to try to lay out how the Angels can get back to success. Feels like a daunting task for me. What about for you?
Perhaps. I mean, you know, maybe Artie will listen to this podcast and bless us with a Pujols and Hamilton size contract. You know, I'm inspired by Lane Kiffin this week. So I'm trying to be upwardly mobile on the podcast, JJ.
Well, I guess I'll be losing you and, you know, like, and then you'll be sending us messages saying on this plane, you know.
Let me finish the handbook.
So that's where I wanted to start this, which is, sounds like a bold statement, but I think it's actually really true, which is, I do believe that the Angels, and I know that there are Pirates fans out there and Rockies fans and maybe a couple of other fan bases, like, no, the Angels are not the worst team over the last decade, but I actually would argue that they are. And again, we are talking about a battle royale of teams that have really struggled, but I do want to make the case for why this is the case. And I'll start here, which is, okay, we'll start with playoff appearances, which is a really big argument here, which is, you notice that the Angels are down there at zero. It's not good for a team that has been spending money normally, has been a top 10 payroll most years. A team that has had Mike Trout for the entirety of that time, and a team that had Shohei Ohtani for the entirety of his pre-free agency career. 6 years of Shohei Ohtani as well, and still no playoff appearances, but I'm not done. So then you have also the fact, why is it? Okay, hold on, let me remove that and give you this one, which is winning percentage. Okay, the Angels have had a 455 winning percentage over the past decade, which is not the worst in baseball, but it's near the worst. And I would point out again, like the teams here at the bottom, we have other teams like the White Sox have been bad. They've been terrible, but they have had playoff appearances. The Rockies, the Royals have had playoff appearances. They've got Bobby Witt Jr. Pirates is the one that you could make the argument with. And the Marlins have had, though, they've had their moments. They've made the playoffs twice. And by the way, no one's going to argue that the Tigers have been worse. They may have had a time where they were worse, but no one has argued that they're worse. So the other thing that I would say is one more key point for this, which is, then this is the one that really jumps out. There's only one team over the last decade that's failed to ever have a winning record. The Angels haven't been 500 in the past decade. And as we laid out before, that is with Mike Trout. That is with Shohei Ohtani. That is with, as you said, like this is a team that has, I will say this is one of the things we could start with is kind of like, what are the biggest problems here? Which is no organization has probably to Artie Moreno's credit, you could argue with the Pirates, you could argue with Nutting that he has not spent. No one can say that about Artie Moreno. Artie Moreno will spend, but no one has spent more money on players just past their peak heading into the decline phase of their career. We just saw Anthony Rendon. They just negotiated a deal that Anthony Rendon is retiring. Anthony Rendon was a great player, and his time as a great player, he was turning 30 basically as the Angels signed him. His time as a great player could almost, you could say, coincided with becoming an Angel. That was the end of his time.
I think you can even argue that, you know, Rendon, though he had a few year peak where he was arguably one of the best two-way players in terms of value defensively and with the bat in the game. Anthony Rendon, like dating back to when he was in college, there were questions about the want and how much he liked playing baseball. And there was also the Josh Hamilton contract, and there were certainly issues and concerns with Hamilton, of course, based on his history. Like, I think you look at some of the other side of it too, where they're willing to take on big contracts that have maybe some interesting risks that I think other teams probably would have balked at giving those guys those kind of deals for that reason. And I mean, at the time, Hamilton was joining Pujols and, you know, a young Mike Trout. It looked like it was going to be, you know, the Dodgers, and that obviously never came to fruition. But I think just even
it did not.
They've had bad luck too, but there's some other stuff that's gone on within the Angels organization over the last 10 years that I think, whether we're talking about the Rockies, whether we're talking about the Pirates, the Nationals was obviously another one that we did, etc. None of those teams have had some of the tragic stuff that's kind of surrounded this organization too. So I think it even goes beyond Artie Moreno. There's been pretty substantial dysfunction with the Angels organization.
There has been dysfunction, but I would also say with this, like you left, when you talk about Rendon, when you talk about Pujols, when you talk about Hamlin, when you talk about Vernon Wells, we could keep going back. When you talk about these players, they have been paying top of the market money for players who, I did a piece. There's a piece coming up at Baseball America. I'm kind of taking this research project a little further, but I'm looking at five WAR seasons, which I kind of really, that's a star level season. The Angels have somehow, with having Ohtani and Trout, have only synced up to have two players have a five WAR season the same year once in the past over a decade. 2022, Trout and Ohtani were both healthy. They both did it. But the other thing that jumps out with that for a team that signed all these players, Trout and Ohtani are the only players who have produced a five WAR season for the Angels, going back to the last one before that was Dan Heron, Jared Weaver, Howie Kendrick in 2011. So we're talking that for almost for over a decade now, they've had the two stars. They've had Trout was a star, and unfortunately for that, and that is, again, you re-sign the best player in baseball, you extend him to a long-term deal. You cannot ding them at all for that. Then Mike Trout, unfortunately, runs into injuries. And it is crazy that there was only one year where Mike Trout had a Mike Trout year and Shohei Ohtani had a Shohei Ohtani year at the same time. That is absolutely, I would say, misfortune, bad luck. But the other part of this, and this is where we're going to kind of dive into this, is the Angels just haven't been able to put the pieces around those stars, those two stars, really. And now, unfortunately, let's just be honest, like, they need Zach Neto to be a star because Trout is at the tail end of his career. Shohei Ohtani's long gone. And that's where we want to get to. It's like, it, for a team that has yet to have a winning record in a decade, for a team that has not made a playoff appearance, who has the longest playoff drought in Major League Baseball now, it doesn't feel like that the corner is near. Like, this is a team that does feel like it's still kind of stuck. And I would say, like, to kind of go back to the Artie Moreno part of this, Jeff, how much of that do you think is the fact that, to credit or detriment, this is not a team, this is not an owner who's ever had that moment where they say, look, sub 500 record last year, we're going to take a step back. We're going to, I would say that there's a little bit of Rockies and Angels similarity here. The extreme example being, you and I both, new teams, new scouts who were going out and were prepping in Ohtani's free agent year. Like, okay, we've got to do our due diligence here. There were Angels, you know, the Angels were prepping for the possibility of trading Shohei Ohtani, which I will say, that would have probably been about as big a package as you're ever going to see for a rental at that time. That would have been one of the bigger blockbuster deals at the deadline that we would see. And by all understanding I have been told this by multiple people over the years, Artie Moreno decided, no, we're going to, you know, again, that is an owner level decision to make. The owner level decision is no, we're not trading Shohei Ohtani. We're going to make another run at it. And they actually then traded four players and then ended up placing them on waivers to get them claimed so they could try to dip back under the luxury tax threshold. This is a team that has never, everything's always about this year. It's never about building for the future, I feel like. Is that a fair criticism?
Yeah, I think that is absolutely accurate. Just based on the way that they've maneuvered over the last several years, they've never kind of, you know, sort of turned into the skid, right? Like, they've always been fighting it, and, you know, that will turn your car around pretty quick, right? So I feel like the analogy is appropriate for them, you know, in your comparison to the Rockies. I think that's sort of been what the issue is they've never kind of taken on the identity of just like self-actualization and just like, we're a bad team, right?
We and, have a and, problem, and now yeah, we need to try to work to fix it.
Exactly. You know, you could even look at the Nationals prior to them gutting the front office. They did try to rebuild this thing. They did try to trade players.
They traded Juan Soto,
you know, probably at his peak value, and got a pretty good package, by the way. Now, granted, it wasn't enough with all their bad drafting and lack of development and no one cares how hard you throw ball four mentality. Like, all that stuff didn't work. But they've at least now, from the ownership level, made the decision to, okay, we got to do something here. We're going to trade Juan Soto the next. All right, we're going to do something here. We're going to gut the front office and bring in new people that have been with a successful program that's a little more forward thinking. At least they're doing that. And even to the Pirates' credit, though the owner won't spend money, they have had good hires. They've had good baseball people. Some of them only last a couple of years, like Horowitz comes and then has a couple of pretty monster drafts and then moves on to the Nationals. But I think, you know, you can at least look at some of these other teams, the White Sox, and say, there's some positive things here, you know, and you can't really necessarily do that with the Angels because they just kind of refuse to accept that, like, Ohtani's gone, Trout's on the back nine, you know, John Lackey and Garrett Anderson aren't walking through that door with Vlad Guerrero Jr. So, you know, those days are gone.
Tim Salmon is also, you know.
Exactly.
Darren Erstad, K-Rod, we could just keep going. But
David Eckstein.
David Eckstein too. You know, David Fletcher's walked out that door too. So, yeah. So they basically, that's where we're going to start with. Like, I think that maybe we oversold this because I don't think there's a lot of Angels fans or even people who aren't Angels fans who are paying attention to the series who would come away and say, why are you trying to fix the Angels? They feel like they're in a really great spot. No, I think we've made that point. Now we want to dive into so how can they fix it? And we'll jump into that right after this quick break.
KP, the website is chubbyshorts.com. The brand is Chubbies, but it's not just shorts.
Yeah, don't be fooled by the website's name. This is a one-stop shop for all things that I love. Swimming trunks, golf polos, and even flannels. It fits me perfectly. One-stop shop is the place to go.
Yes, sir. KP, I've been wearing their flannel overshirt. It's like my favorite flannel, and your softest sweater having a little baby. It's the best of both worlds. Classic flannel look with the warmth of a fleece, and we know it's that time of year to pull that off. The Chubbies flannel overshirt. It feels like your favorite flannel, but with the warmth of a cozy sweater. And for a limited time, Chubbies is giving our listeners 20% off your purchase at Chubbies with the promo code FAL at checkout. But if it's Black Friday, skip the code. Take advantage of an even bigger markdown during their exclusive Black Friday sale. Just head to chubbyshorts.com and make sure to support the show by telling them that Foul Territory sent you.
So, Jeff, we want to start with the funny thing about this is like when you talk about the Nationals, when you talk about the Pirates, there are these, I would say, like with the Pirates, it's been, okay, can the Pirates develop hitters, right? With the Nationals, it was, the Nationals literally did not draft and develop a hitter for like a decade. Like, there was a decade-long stretch. It's like Rendon and Bryce Harper. And then it was like, we're to like Dylan Cruz, and it's like no one in between. We don't know about Dylan Cruz yet. We don't know about Brady House yet. James Wood doesn't count. He was a trade. Like, there was that level of a gap between impact drafters. I don't want to make it sound like that with the Angels, right? Like, I would say that we both feel like that they need to dig deeper in the draft. But that's not, this is a team that has drafted horribly. They don't ever get any talent. It's generally been, their drafts have been really top heavy, have they not? It's been something where, yes, they produced a Zach Neto. Yes, they produced a Reed Detmers. But you get past that first and second, and sometimes even a little bit into the third round. I'm not saying that everyone's hitting on their fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth round picks every year. But the Angels do not hit on those guys almost ever. And I think that there's draft and development does need a step of improvement. How would you view it?
Yeah, I think the targeting as well as the player development plan, I don't even think it's a matter of style at this point, because we don't really know what their style is, because they haven't had really the...
For one year, it was pitchers, because they had that year they took only pitchers.
I was going to get to that in a minute. But the talent hasn't necessarily been there for them to develop and for them to have a type of pitcher. I can even go back and look at some of the Rockies drafts over the last 3 or 4 years and say, all right, they're definitely going for lower release height guys that have flatter four-seam fastballs and guys that have sinkers. Okay. Like, there's at least like some styles that like boxes that these guys fall into. Fine. You really can't do that with the Angels. It's kind of been very hodgepodge. There hasn't been a whole lot of consistency. And then I think you go back to that year where they drafted, you know, they drafted 20 pitchers in that draft. And in terms of the guys that they've produced from that draft, 11th rounder, Chase Silseth. And that's just about it. Sam Bachman.
And nothing against Chase Silseth, but I don't also like, we should be clear.
No.
Chase Silseth has 100 big league innings and a 4.68 ERA and a 5.25 FIP and a 93 ERA plus.
Exactly. And the other, and like the top three picks were Sam Bachman, Kai Bush, Landon Marceau, Luke Murphy, Brett Carey. I mean, this is not turning into anything. Half of these guys are already retired. I mean, this is 2021. So I think especially when we look at pitchers and we look at drafts, we want to give it a 4 or 5 year window to start to at least take some shape, right? Because there are guys year two, year three, year four that can kind of pop. None of that happens. And I think that's what the issue is. As you start to look back on some of these drafts in 2021, 22, they may get hit with a player at the top, like a Zach Neto, whoever. They're really not hitting in rounds like 2 to 20 at all, like ever. And even the guys they've gotten out of those rounds have been players like Chase Silseth or Caden Dana, who I think had some points in time a couple of years ago where it looked like, okay, this could go good. And then they rushed him up to the big leagues. He really wasn't ready. There were some things that he had to work on, particularly like release points and that sort of thing. It was just very easy to pick up different pitches out of his hand. So it's like they knew he was tipping. And then they sent him to face the best hitters in the world. I was like, that's probably a bad development plan. Sometimes taking that extra year might frustrate fans with a pitcher like Caden Dana. But if he's up in the big leagues and he looks the way he needs to be successful at 23 or 24, that's still a really good outcome.
I want to give another example of that I've used over the years. And Nolan Schanuel, Nolan Schanuel is not a miss, right? Like, they drafted him in the first round. And he's been a 1.5 war level first baseman for them for now multiple years. But to kind of along the exact same lines we were talking about with Caden Dana, like Nolan Schanuel will play this upcoming year as a 24-year-old the whole season. It'll also be his last year before arbitration. He is going to be halfway to free agency, and the flaws that were there, that were apparent, that we wrote about, literally, like, when he came up, it's like, he has really low bat speed. He does not have the ability to pull the ball for any kind of power. He does have a great batting eye. He has survival skills, but is that what you want in a first baseman, again, who's also not like gold glove defensively? And that's where he is now. Like, you would still say that that's where he is. The next year that he slugs 400 will be his first year slugging 400 of the majors. He slugged, had a 264, 353, 389 season last year. That's not terrible. I don't want to make it sound like what was he doing in the big leagues. But I would kind of ask the question, what is he doing in the big leagues? Like, why, when a player still has things that could be developed, things that could be improved in the minors, what giant benefit, what payoff have the Angels gotten because they decided to bring him up 2.5 seasons ago now? Because, or 2.25 seasons ago, I should say. Because now you're looking at it and saying, he's going to start moving into getting more expensive. He's going to start, I'll say this for Nolan Chanuel's case, good news for him, he's going to hit free agency at an age that very few college hitters ever hit free agency. But if he starts to really develop, if we said that his age 26 season is a really impressive season, I would kind of ask the question, okay, great, Angels. Again, we don't know that that'll happen, but if it did, if he really did start to develop, like, he has an off-season bat speed training program, he gets stronger, he learns how to hit the ball in the air more consistently with power. If all those things happened, I would kind of ask the question, wouldn't it have been great if he'd have had another year, year and a half, which would still have put him on a fast track to have developed that in Double A and Triple A so that you get that payoff? Because if Nolan Chanuel has a great age 26 season, it'll be like prepping him for free agency. And we haven't, like, right now, the Angels, he has not been a reason that they could have gotten over 500. He's been more of like, he's fine. There's been too many of, Zach Neto is the, I would say, the example that is to their credit, like, into his credit, they moved him fast. I would say that that has served them well because he has been a difference maker when healthy for them. To their credit, I'll give them credit that Taylor Ward developed into a very solid player who they just then netted Grayson Rodriguez for. That's a risky trade, you could say, but I would say if I'm the Angels, I do that trade 100 out of 100 times, taking the chance on, I've got this young pitcher who, by the way, could be the best pitcher in a rotation if everything breaks right.
Yeah, that was actually a nice departure, I think, from a lot of the moves that they've made where they bought the younger, more, longer controlled player. That was an awkward way to say that, but, you know, more years in the contract, all that sort of stuff for a guy that was more or less going to be a one and done that I think logically would not have been a good fit for your current build and your trajectory. So that was actually a really nice departure. So kudos to the Angels on that move. Maybe they're turning a corner, JJ, but I would agree with, you know, your full assessment there, that there are some players that, you know, they've had some success with moving them quickly, particularly Neto was one. But while you talked about Nolan Chanuel, what kind of went through my head is this is not that dissimilar from the style of prospect the Red Sox tend to draft. Now, maybe they don't take this guy in the first round, but let's just say perhaps they did. He drops to or falls to them in a spot where they would take him. Had Chanuel been a Red Sox second round pick that year, how long do you think he would have spent in the minor leagues and gone through the bat speed program? Granted, they maybe never get him to 55 bat speed, but they've taken players like that who maybe had those prerequisite plate skills, you know, the swing decisions and the bat to ball ability. And bigger bodies, and then gotten them to a point, whether it's through changing the path of the swing or just, you know, simply training bat speed, they've gotten to a point with guys like that where they've been able to turn them into something productive, at least from a well-rounded hitting perspective, maybe a 15 to 18 home run guy. If Nolan Chanuel was a 15 to 18 home run guy and hit the ball that hard, he would probably be a 290 hitter. You know, he's probably running 400 on base percentages and is slugging enough that you're saying, okay, this guy may not be a 30 home run first baseman, but he's one of the better hitting first basemen in the game. And he's somebody that, you know, on a winning team, you love to have a guy like that hitting sixth in your lineup. He's not that. And I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he could still become that with the right focus, but you're not getting that internally.
To go back to that, I remember when he came up, I remember doing a story. I remember watching every ball that Nolan Chanuel had hit in the air outside of the complex at that point, because every one of those games was on. We, you know, pull up Synergy. And there were very few balls that he had hit when he made his Major League Baseball debut. You would say you could count on one hand the balls where an outfielder didn't step in on the ball. Like, he hadn't hit the ball. It wasn't that he hadn't hit a homer at that point. He hadn't really hit a ball to the warning track at that point. That is a player having still a significant, a potentially fixable flaw, but one that, like you said, has affected him. He still gets on base, but it does kind of cut into his batting average because teams still do not feel he has strong more power, obviously. Thankfully, he does now hit the ball at least occasionally over 300 feet, but it's something where you can shift, you can, you know, in the outfield, you can position players. There are hits that you don't get because they're not having to respect you as much. The same way that when, you know, I'll put it this way, that when a power hitter hits those, they drop in front of the outfielder because the outfielder had to be a little deeper. Well, tied in with that, the other part of this is, it is not that the Angels, this is not the Orioles of a few years ago, where the Orioles had that stretch where it's like, international, we don't sign players on the international market. That's for everyone else. Yeah, again, and the Angels, this is what I'm saying, like, this is much more multifaceted because the Angels have tried signing players internationally. The Angels have signed the best player on the international non-foreign professional market of the last decade, because Shohei Ohtani was a minor league signing of theirs. So that is as good. That is the best. Him and Juan Soto are the best of the last decade. By the way, the Nationals have the other one too. This is multifaceted, as we say. But after him, if you said who are the impact international, homegrown international players, best you could come up with since Ohtani, and that's going back a ways now, is Jose Soriano. And as both of us would love to note, because we're in Rule 5 fever right now, they did lose Soriano and then got him back. He was a Rule 5 pick because they left him unprotected, but thankfully for them, they got him back. He's been a solid contributor for them. But, and this is a team that we right now would say, like, if you're looking at their top 10 prospects, it is the Nelson Radas and the Gabriel Davalios and all that were kind of Joshua Lugos and all that we're giving hope to. But the track record has not been great over the last decade. And that's been another part of this problem, has it not?
Yeah, I think it's been a huge part of the problem. And it's one of the reasons that when you watch their affiliates, it's just not a lot of depth throughout the organization. Even with, you know, Operation Rocket City over the last couple of years, that team is only okay. You know, and as somebody that watches a lot of minor league baseball, watches a lot of Northwest League, covered the Rockies for a number of years here and have been covering the Blue Jays, and, you know, Vancouver is an easy one for me to watch. I see a Tri-City matchup and it's like, I wonder who Hillsborough has tonight. I wonder who Spokane has tonight. Like, I wonder if those are better games. Because more often than not, I'm not seeing anything on the other side, you know. So,
I mean, let's be clear.
Entirely be focused on Vancouver, and it's like, well, I'm going to watch them against actual good teams in a week, you know.
Let's be clear. Like, they did change it a little bit this year, but there was a stretch.
Ryan Johnson was there. That's true.
There was a stretch there of a couple of years where the Angels said, okay, I know that we're mandated to have four full season clubs, but we're going to treat our low A club as kind of, that's where we break guys in. Mm-hmm. And then Rocket City, we're going to put everyone at Rocket City, and then we're going to jump them to the majors from Rocket City. And as you said, like Northwest League, no, we don't really go there. Triple A PCL Salt Lake, no, we don't really go there. It was something where it was almost like they were a two-team farm system, full season farm system, where the best way you could put it is if you were on the high A or the triple A team, it probably was a sign that you were kind of being put out to pasture in some ways. Mm-hmm. And that kind of ties in, which I would say this is probably the most important thing to me that they have to do, which ties into digging deeper in the draft. It ties into stepping it up internationally. But a stat I will share with you, Jeff, and with you all, the listeners and viewers. I think the biggest problem for the Angels, okay, the biggest problem is if you keep spending massive contracts on players who then produce at sub-replacement level. Okay, that is something that's really hard to overcome. So let's start there. The Anthony Rendon contracts and all have really hurt. But every year, I would say, with the Angels for the last many years, you go into the season, especially there was a stretch there, like when they had Ohtani still, where it's like, if every single player on this team stays healthy and produces like they can, maybe they've got something here. Mm-hmm. And they would have a little stretch, and then injuries would start to arise. Players would go on the IL. And the best teams, again, the Dodgers have resources, obviously. But the Dodgers are a team, for example, on the other extreme, where the Dodgers, like, someone goes down and it's like, oh, yeah, this guy who's been sitting at AAA for us but is really good, he's going to come up now. Or, oh, that pitcher's hurt. Oh, well, the good news is Glasnow's coming off the IL right now. They had waves of players. The Angels are the opposite of that. The Angels are the team that year after year, it's like, I didn't realize that guy got another shot in the majors, or I didn't realize that that guy ever got the shot in the majors. So here's the stat for you. 2025, the Angels had, you know, if you talk about war, zero is replacement level, right? The logic being, in estimate, that if you have a player who's producing below zero war, you should be able to go out and find someone equivalent for a almost no cost acquisition, a waiver claim type or things like that. Doesn't always work out that way, but that's the general idea. If you have a player who's a negative 0.2 war, 0.3 war player, okay, that's replacement level. The Angels had six hitters and six pitchers last year who were negative 0.5 war or worse. Those 12 players produced negative 7.6 B war, baseball reference war. That's essentially that you're digging a hole with those 12 players. And that's not every sub-zero player. That's 0.5 or worse players. They're digging a Shohei Ohtani-sized hole to dig out from under. And you say, okay, maybe that was 1 year. 2024, five hitters, five pitchers, negative 7.7 war from negative 0.5 war or worse players. 2023, six hitters, six pitchers, negative 9 war from those 12. 2022, eight hitters and six pitchers, negative 9.8 war from those 14 players. So what you're saying here is year after year after year, the Angels are playing players who are utterly overmatched as hitters or pitchers and are getting enough playing time. Because here's the thing, right? That's a cumulative stat. If you come up and you are utterly overmatched and you're a hitter and you go 0-for-8 and then they go, why is this guy here? You send him back down. That's like a negative 0.2 war player. You have to play some to get to negative 0.5, to get to negative 1, to get to negative 1.5 as some of these guys do. That is, you are playing someone who is really producing at a gaping chest wound level of production. That's the part here that I would say if they ever take the, we're going to stop trying to focus on stars and now, and we're going to look a little bit longer term, we're going to look a little bit bigger picture. If the Angels could go from, and look, we've had the Angels in the, near the tail end of our farm system rankings for most of the last 7, 8, 9, 10 years. if they could get to that level of depth, like Jeff, you and I know when we do a top 30, there are some top 30s you do and you get to like 20, you're like, I don't have anyone left. And then there are other top 30s where you're like, these players aren't great, but man, there are a lot of these guys who could be big leaguers. The Angels are never in category B, I would say, is a way to put it. How important is it, or how could they fix this going forward?
Sorry, I'm still trying to collect my thoughts after you used the phrase gaping chest wound level of production, which
it's fair.
That could be a biography of some of those players. I think the way that you ultimately can fix this is by figuring out what's wrong with your identification process. We talked about the domestic draft. We talked about the international market. I think some of that has taken place in free agency as well, though that might be a little bit easier to answer in terms of what the problem has been there. But I think, you know, if they were able to have a few really good drafts where they consistently targeted players that can get better in the first five rounds, took some shots in round 6 to 11 on interesting college pitchers and hitters, and then tried to do what the Brewers did. And I think the Blue Jays and some other teams have had success doing over the last 5 or 6 years is target some of those under scouted, under committed high school players that you can sign for $250,000 or $300,000. And the way that Moreno has spent money, he might be willing to like go over, you know, the overage in some of those cases, not to lose picks, but just spending a little bit more money in the draft, allocating those resources a little bit better, having a more cohesive plan where you target some upside as well as some players that have higher major league floors. I think targeting better athletes too, which they do sometimes in the first round, but it's just a lot of inconsistency and a lot of like kind of easy to spot. Okay, this guy's going to be a role player at best, but more often than not, he's probably going to be an org guy. They got to stop doing that sort of drafting. And I think that I don't want to say they haven't been with the modern times in terms of player development, but I think they have to have a very top-down mentality in terms of whoever's setting the tone, what the philosophy is, the things that they're going to focus on, things they're going to try to be good at, and then build that mechanism around it, get the right coaches in place that can then follow directions and you know, put through instruction that, you know, is in line with that mentality. And I think improve the communication. Now, I don't know if they can do all those things with the ownership that they have, but I think they can at least try to put all of that in place and try to improve the infrastructure. I think that's what the problem is here, because they've had ideas, they've gone in certain directions, they've had talented people. I don't think this is a Rockies problem where they need to actually, you know, get up and move two decades into the future because they're living in the past. I don't know if that's really the Angels' problem as much as it just seems like they're constantly doing this, they're doing a little of that, they're going over here, they're trying this in the draft, and they're never just kind of following a tried and true method.
I would say that again, if you said, We've seen multiple managers. Like for a long time, Mike Socha was the driving. I would say one of the things here is this: Mike Socha was a driving force in the organization for a long time. Kind of like when you say like setting a stage for everything, and then that kind of went, you know, off the rails eventually. You know, he departed, and since then there's been Joe Maddon. There's been like different voices at the major league level. They've had multiple managers. You know, hasn't really had a manager with a lot of staying time. I think they've had some good coaches come through here. Now, retaining them has been, I think that when you look even at the front office side, I would say, I feel like that a lot of this does kind of go back to is it ownership more than anything else here that we're talking about that's kind of driving this? Because the other things that we have to acknowledge here, like that have been reported on, are they did just finish an upgrade program as far as their spring training facilities. But I would say that you could say that before that, they were a little bit behind the times. You know, they were not at the cutting edge of facilities. you know, we've had things, you know, we've had players come out and say that the facilities are not kept up to the level of major league expectation. It's one of those things where there's been, again, it all seems to tie together that there's this approach that when it comes to the big move, the big swing, bringing in the big free agent, there's always been a willingness for that. And again, that is spending. But when it talks, when it comes to, hey, if we spend another $5 million a year here in this area of sports science, in this area or whatever, the consistency of approach on things like that has often been a little bit harder to sustain with the Angels. We don't, before we go, we're Baseball America. So we feel like we need to kind of dive into a little bit of, okay, so where, you know, we know that the Angels are coming off of a 72 win season at the major league level. And I would say that they earned that 72 wins. It was not a team where you say, oh, that team was just, you know, a 90 win team that was just a couple of bad breaks away. When you look at this team, when you look at the farm system now, is there hope here for the Angels fans in 2026? Or is this the time to say, hey, we haven't done it for quite a while, but this is a time to start taking some long-term thinking and looking a little bit longer term, which maybe the Grayson Rodriguez trade could be the first harbinger of that.
Yeah. You know, I certainly think that the Grayson Rodriguez trade was a move in the right direction. But I don't know. I mean, I still think you look at this Angels farm system and you look at the current 25-man roster and you can say, all right, like the lineup isn't awful at the top. But then you kind of look and you're like, Bryce Teodosio is going to be their center fielder. Really? You know, he's a borderline big leaguer, let alone a guy that should be penciled in as your starting center fielder. And I think you look at the rest of the rotation.
There are teams where he would not be your backup in outfielder.
I think there are teams where he would be in AAA. Yeah. A lot of them. You then look at the rotation. Kikuchi is fine. Soriano, as we talked about, is fine. Grayson Rodriguez. Then you have Reed Detmers, who really has regressed over the last several years. Caden Dana, we talked about those issues before. You have names in the bullpen with guys like Robert Stevenson and Brock Burke that sort of even forgot. and Stevenson's case, like, it depends if he's healthy or not, right? So it's not like they have this loaded bullpen or a rotation that's pretty good. I think it's kind of like, yeah, the top seven in the lineup could be worse. Adele had a bounce back year. Soler, if healthy, can hit you 30 bombs. Christian Mora, I'm not going to be right off. But they're also not.
Let me interject here. When we talk about this, the other problem you have here is Adele is a good hitter who still has some issues defensively, right? You don't want him too stretched defensively. And at times they had him really being overstretched defensively. Christian Mora, we don't know how well he's going to hit. We do feel, I would feel it's comfortable that every evaluation we have is that he is going to be fringy defensively if you try to play him at second base, right? Like Jorge Soler should never play in the outfield at this point in his career. Like at this point, he is a DH and DH only, but the problem is Mike Trout needs to DH a lot because if he plays in the outfield, he often gets hurt.
Well, that's only a problem if they're both healthy at the same time, which that might have been like 15.
But so my point on all of this, though, is other than Neto, there's just really not a whole lot of defensive ability here either.
Well, the other thing that I was about to get to, too, is, JJ, how many left-handed bats do they have in this lineup? You know?
That is crazy. Like, they're the anti-Tigers this way.
Yeah, Nolan Schanuel, everybody else is a righty. And I mean, like, all four of their bench bats that are listed that are all on the 40-man roster at this point, and Travis d'Arnaud, Oswald Peraza, Kyren Paris, and Matthew Lugo are all right-handed as well, JJ.
That That is really crazy. Like, again, I say
with the Tigers, these days.
The Tigers, if you hit right-handed, you better do something. Like the Tigers, like, you can't play infield for us. Almost like they just draft short. They draft left-handed or switch hitting shortstops over and over. Fran Yerber Mantilla is pretty much like the only right-handed hitting shortstop. Okay, Javier Baez gets grandfathered in, but he's really a center fielder slash shortstop now. But everyone else they have is a left-handed hitter. McGonagall, Trey Cruz, a switch hitter. The Colt Keefs, the Jake, all these guys, they're all left-handed hitters. The Angels are the opposite of them.
Riley Green.
Sometimes with the Tigers, I'm like, probably use another, like one more right-handed bat maybe or so. You know, like I've kind of like laid it out when doing the Tigers. Like they have like a couple of right, like, it might be like a, you know, a way that you can get like a, you know, one of these backup infielders in AAA up. It's like, hey, there are right-handed against lefty bats here, you know, to be had kind of thing. But yeah, like, so then we go to the farm system right now, and Tyler Bremner, who they took first round last year, again, the Angels, it's not like that they don't take guys. They get to pick at the top of the draft a lot. And they take guys. Like, Bremner is a guy who could be a very interesting pitcher. As you said, the problem with some of these are Reed Detmers was a very interesting pitcher when they took him. Caden Dano is an interesting pitcher. It's like, is developing these guys has been a little bit of a challenge. But Bremner's pretty much, I would say, Ryan Johnson, I do not see as currently being a top 100 prospect. When we talk about rushing a guy, they sent him to the majors to get shelled as a reliever, having no minor league experience. Then sent him back to the minors like, okay, we'll let you start now. To his credit, he then went to high A and was like, I'm pretty good. Like, hey, there's something here. But what I would say is, you know, then we talked about Nelson Rada. Then we talk about a Joshua Lugo. We talk about Gabriel Davalio. It's an interesting bat. Also is one of the largest young catchers you will ever see. Like, there are real questions about his ability to stick behind the plate. There's not a whole lot of slam dunks here in this farm system. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, no, I think that's really accurate. Just even looking at, you know, the end of season top 30, and yeah, I mean, I like George Klassen. I think Ryan Johnson's probably a big leaguer. I couldn't tell you if those guys ever exceed the status of, you know, number five starter, or even potentially like one inning reliever. There's some more interesting names, like, you know, Davalio, really bad body. It's a real interesting bat. The data is really good. The scouting reports aren't great. Some of the other things we've heard haven't been great. Trey Gregory Alford throws really hard. He's really, really athletic. But the shape at this point on the four seam isn't great. So you got to sort of figure out where that goes. I think Dylan Jordan was maybe a nice little sleeper for them, who's got pretty good stuff. So, I mean, I do feel like the Angels systems looked a little worse in recent years, but it's still a pretty bad system. Like, I have the Astros, which is a very shallow system, but they have a lot more guys where I can look down that list and say, oh, there's probably a handful or two of big leaguers here. And maybe a couple of guys that, you know, get that Astros. I guess they have the devil magic now and not the Cardinals, where it seems like they're always churning like a three war pitcher every year. And it could be somebody like Ronel Blanco or, you know, pick your poison. So they're always sort of full of surprises.
And the Angels do not churn out a three war pitcher. As just like that, they don't find those under the couch cushions. That's not really happening with them, you know. So I hate to say we're not trying to be that pessimistic, because there are some things here. Like, that's what's kind of maddening about this in some ways. Like, it is kind of like that we have expectations here, because this is a team. Again, this is not even trying to bury Artie Moreno completely. Artie Moreno is willing to spend money. He just hasn't. It's been on in ways that, like, if you said, hey, instead of signing the 31, 32-year-old to sign him up through his age 37, 38 seasons, maybe instead spread that around. And again, I would say more than anything, just year after year, it's like, don't have three or four of the like 20 least productive players in the major leagues every year. Because again, the key point I'll make on this is usually there's the way you get to the absolute least productive players are you have the Chris Davises of the world, which some years the Angels have their versions of that, where it's like, this guy's on such a contract that we can't not play him to hope to see if he can turn it around. But often it's the players who we're playing this player who's obviously overmatched and we don't have a better option. Whereas other teams, I mean, you saw this with the Braves ran out of, the Braves were terrible in the last year. They ran out of pitching, but they just kept churning guys. Like, so you don't have as many of these like negative 1 point something war. Cause when a guy's terrible, they just moved on to the next one. The Angels have been a little bit more of like, we don't have anyone else to move on to kind of decisions. It seems like, I do think that there's possibilities here, you know, but it is still an uphill climb, especially again, in a division where, you know, I mean, the A's took a step back. They really did. To their credit, because of that, for all of their problems with ownership, with not having a home, you know, all that, they've built something here that's kind of intriguing because they have now a Nick Kurtz. They have a Jacob Wilson. They have some young pitchers. They have the foundation here. And then they went off, by the way, and traded for, you know, a better prospect than anything that the Angels have gotten back in a trade in years. And again, nothing against that trade, but Leo DeVries' caliber prospect would have been the starting point if you had traded Shohei Ohtani at the deadline. And what did they get instead? They got a losing record again and watching him depart in free agency. Sometimes you got to take a step back to take a step forward. And this is a team that's been kind of stuck because they try to take a step forward, but they're not there to take the step forward. Well, that's our fix it for the Angels. End of this one. We will probably next week, just a little bit word of warning. We might do two. We might push it back because next week, Jeff and my, one of our favorite days of the year is next Wednesday as we're recording this on Tuesday. But, you know, next Wednesday afternoon, 2 o'clock, is the Rule 5 draft. It's kind of hard to imagine us not podcasting about that in some way, shape, or form. I'm going to be in Orlando. Jeff will be at home, but we will probably convene at some point, I would think, to talk about that after the dust clears. So maybe we push it back a little bit next week.
I'll be here having my annual Rule 5 draft party with all my neighbors, you know.
I mean, it is the place to be.
It's the Super Bowl and that, you know.
Exactly. I mean, no, that and the Super Bowl. You know.
Well, the Pats might be in the Super Bowl this year, JJ, so.
You know. But for Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.